Good evening, Simon, and everybody else.
Good evening.
It's Wednesday night at 7 o'clock, and we are in the ABD. This is the ninth week we've been doing this, Simon.
Ninth week already?
Yeah. That means, and we're barely started. I mean, Jesus, we're like on the second, where are we? We just started, but that's the nature of things. As we work with the hidden work, we're working our way, what's called slow reading, because we're introducing something that is impossible or nearly impossible. And what it is that we're introducing is, can we stand on a different fertile ground in which to view the world in a slightly different way? The answer is yes, we can. Now, we've talked about that extensively in the first few classes. And what I wanted to start in on now is the beginnings of the introduction to the actual, what happens when we actually enter the bardos. And this, we may have to have Jana come up here. I don't think Pat's coming tonight. But we're going to be talking about the moment of death and what occurs with, and we're going to begin introducing the bardo bounce, okay, what actually happens when these events occur. Now, why are we doing this? The reason we're doing it now, because some of you may have noticed that you have a sneaking suspicion that you're alive, and we don't necessarily have a test for that, but take it for granted at the moment that you are, for purposes of this debate.
Okay.
Yes, sir. All right. And during that period of time, what we're able to do is to infuse in our consciousness something about the between lives experience. Now, I don't know anybody here that's like an extreme sports person, like any of the really difficult sports or anything like that. But some of us in ancient times may have done that. And when you're in the midst of that, you realize there's no way of explaining exactly what it's like. You know, you're married to, your wife used to be a concert level
musician.
Playing the bassoon, if I remember correctly, which I think is a phenomenal adventure. But, and we listen to that. Let's say we listen to a symphonic piece. I'm very interested in seeing live Beethoven's Ninth Symphony. If anybody sees it being played in their area, for some reason I'm interested in seeing it. But in any event, so when this, let's say she's performing something like, I don't know, Pathétique, which would, you know, would have that woodwind in it.
Bolero,
something like that. And you're in the midst of it with high-level professional musicians. And we understand right now, we can say, oh, yeah, it was really beautiful. I heard it, and it was just a beautiful thing to listen to. But if you're also that professional musician or other musicians, so I'm not saying that, musicians, when you're in the invocation of the musician of the event, then there's an understanding that you have that in a certain way is difficult or impossible to communicate unless you've been in that specific invocation. Does this make sense?
Sure.
Let's just take it from the point of view of music, because everybody, a lot of people have played, they've sung, you know, singers or whatever.
Sure.
So do you understand that there's a form of understanding that we're talking about here? It is not a mental understanding. Is that correct? Would you say that's true?
Right. So it's experiential, or is that what you're talking about, or it's something I have to have been present for, not just experienced, but actually acknowledged or recognized that I experienced.
The form of knowledge that we're talking about is direct knowing of that particular invocational space. That's what I'm referring to.
Okay.
And since it's not, since it's not something that we can communicate in a certain way, we have to begin to lay into our consciousness the hint of it. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're doing. Okay, so, because what we're talking, fundamentally what we're talking about is, can you stand in a different place? I was with somebody the other day, and we were in the midst of a very complicated business transaction. Suddenly, the individual suddenly realized, you know, are all of these, like, karmic manifestations, you know,
right.
the various people that were working there, the type of business, who the interactions were with, and it's that kind of moment that I'm talking about. All right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, so to the extent that we have knowledge of what that is in those moments, is we may have tools that are helpful to us in that second permutation.
Okay.
All right?
Okay.
is this too abstract, or? It's too abstract.
You should probably continue.
Okay. Okay, let's say someone was describing to you how to hike from one area to another area. And there's the general description of what the path is like and, like, the general direction. But then if they're going to say things like, now, when you're about a mile in, you're going to see this grand oak there. Then you know you're on the right path, and there's going to be a pair of peaks that you're going to see in the north, probably 30 miles away. So you know you're on the right path.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, you turn due east.
Okay.
So what I'm trying to say is that there are markers.
Okay.
There are markers, and that the individuals have documented those markers. I'm saying, how can we incorporate the markers into our lexicon such that when the event occurs, we have something to pull through? What is the last part of the four lines? Does anybody remember all of a sudden?
My habits.
Our habits will carry us through.
What habits?
Our essence habits.
A bad, bad habit.
Or?
Our habits of attention.
Whatever our habits are, that's what's going to carry us through.
Well, I hope they're Voyager. If they want to be carried through the Voyager.
He's hoping. He's hoping. If you go and you read chapter 24, Practical Work on Self, The Last Hours of Life, you're going to see that guy says, how do you take the uncertainty out of some of this stuff? Yeah. And so that's what we're working with now. We hope that our habits will be okay, but now we're going to start investigating those and to see what happens. Okay, now where did I say we were going to start?
After this, it was after this italic passage. Just 36 for you, or 37?
Yeah.
Which
David?
One for you, Ivan?
34 is what I have marked.
34?
34 and 35.
Yeah, 35.
Judy.
On the 30th anniversary book.
Oh, here we go. No, what I'm saying, I want to go to page 42. On the 25th anniversary book, and the second paragraph, which says, at the moment of death. Do you see that? It's in the same introduction to the macro dimensions.
Yeah, we have different pages here.
At the moment of death is 36. Yeah.
36, Judy.
Thank you. In
the newer book.
Okay, we're going to take a little bit of time to digest these particular paragraphs. Do you have it there?
David, can I just make a comment?
Yeah.
before we start on that, please? When you're talking about, you know, what tools do we have? The really critical thing, if we look at two pages before, is the attention that we bear. The attention.
The attention?
Yeah.
How much attention you can bring to bear on the actual present?
Right.
So,
just wanted to, you know, have that in, you know, hanging out in the space here.
There's absolutely no question. I remember there was a class there was something we were doing, and actually you were visiting Mr. Lost Horizon. This was about a year ago, and then Jana was here, and you were sitting in chairs right along here. And I asked the question, you know, what happens when you're in that particular space? Why do things seem to slow down? Do you remember that question? Do you remember what her answer was? The answer was, because there's a lot more attention there. There's more attention.
Mm-hmm.
So Judy's point is correct, except can you maintain your attention when you've been hit by a ball bat in the gut? That's what we're practicing for. What are our habits at that point? All right? Because we're discussing a powerful event that occurs, and we're going to start introducing that event right now. All right, are we okay now?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you for that, Judy, and orienting us in that particular manner. At the moment of death, the Voyager has the most energy. So it bounces all the way up into the clear light, and depending on the amount of energy released at the moment of death, is able to remain in the clear light for longer or lesser periods. You are bouncing around in a spectrum of light which appears different in color and form on each perceptual level. Okay, so we're going to talk about the clear light in a minute, okay? And I might. You're welcome to come up whenever you want. Okay, what does that mean? So at the moment of death, let's break it apart. Then what does he say?
The Voyager has most energy.
Okay. So let's talk about that for a second. So, I mean, let's just break it apart in a certain way. Death occurs, what does it mean death has occurred? Okay, death occurs when the vital energy, there's either a fatal illness or an accident or something like that, but it's the vital force that ceases at that moment. Right? But what else is occurring right then? There's still the karmic force of the essential self moving forward, right? There's the karmic wind still blowing, and suddenly we're released in a profound manner from the physical envelope. So there's an immense amount of energy associated with that event. Most of what occurs at that time is that we black out. Our habit is to black out. We blank out. We can't, there's more energy than we can. Okay, let's just take that for an example. There's more energy than we can handle. So what is a practice that we could incorporate into our lives today that allows us to work with more energy? So Judy's saying more attention, right? Pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
Can you recall right now an event that has occurred, let's say in the last 2 weeks, where there was so much energy that you had to get out of it, in a sense? You got out of it either through a mechanicality that is your current habit. right?
Yeah, you know, David, this is a very interesting point, because when a shock comes at you in the term of an event, an emotion, or whatever it is, the more focused your attention is, okay, the more that you can actually watch yourself trying to leave. And if you can make that distinction, you can stay. It's like it's a moment of choice.
So,
really.
So on the one hand, our author here, our guide, says, at the moment of death, that's the moment of most energy, right? So what happens when you have a lot of energy? As Judy is saying, and she, I think, speaks for many of us, that when that occurs, we just bail out. We bail out, and we go into the mechanicality, unless we can develop the expertise of staying in the moment and allowing our attention to stay present during that time. And yes, you're going to watch the machine go through all kinds of its calisthenics, and let it so be. That's what machines.
David?
Yes, sir.
Could we not engage in a form of invocation to ready ourselves for higher energies and stay in the invocational space, particularly when it's uncomfortable?
So you've got to read in The Last Hours of Life, Gnostic Man's presentation. And that's what he's implying too, Harry. But the impact of the moment of death is profound. All right? It's so profound that it's hard to stay on the bucking bronco at that moment. So yes, we can practice that. And some of you, like when you're crafting what you want for your last hours of life and you're crafting that moment, part of it might want to be to create a momentum of presence, right?
Sure, in order to have a continuity.
To attempt to have a continuity. Right now we're sitting here, we're thinking, oh yeah, I just need to be in that meditative state, listening to Joni Mitchell, you know, and you know, I have a nice candle there and all of this stuff, and you know, it's going to be really good. Well, except it's like a meteor is going to hit their house.
Mm-hmm.
And
did you have a comment?
Can you hold your attention there? That's the question. Yes, Susan.
We have a comment from Simon. He said that you often tell of this reference. There's a story of the guards training in which, in spite of being shot, he remains clear.
Yeah, and this is the elite bodyguards who are trained, and part of the training is they round a corner and they're shot with a paintball. And they are yet required to hold attention and stay on guard for their host. I have been shot with a paintball, and actually, interestingly enough, now that I think of it, I was able to hold attention and continue attempting to decimate my opposition. Tamara.
We have to repeat what she's saying.
Yeah, we'll repeat what she's saying. Or you can sit there for a minute. Please. Thank you.
I had the opportunity to be at the bedside of my father when he died. And there was my experience was of a tremendous whirlwind that began to happen. I had been reading before he passed, but then as I read, it became much less chaotic, and there was this sense of a descending presence. So we have a tool that would be tremendously helpful to have right at our death at our deathbed, because I did.
What is that tool?
Well, the ABD, to have a reader.
That's too general.
Well, to have a reader reading for you at the moment of death, because I experienced being in the room with him. I experienced that momentum that was like a whirlwind.
The momentum of continuity.
The momentum of his passing.
Of leaving the body.
Of his departure from the body, and it was huge and swirling and. And then there was.
Why did you freak out?
Well, I had a task that I was performing.
Oh.
And it was also the other thing that was interesting. My sister, who is a minister, she was also at the deathbed, and you know she's familiar with the work. So, you know, she did the benediction, and he passed, and then. They left the room for me to be able to be with him, and I also experienced how that most conventional religions are done at the moment of death. And yeah, they're done, and yet my work was just beginning.
And
that
was just beginning. And this is the opportunity that the Tibetan Book of the Dead, and then refresh for us. In a repeater, energetic by EJ with American Book of the Dead, it allows us to have a tool to deal with what appears to be the next phase. Okay?
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. So one of the things that we want to practice with, even though at the moment we're not faced with the moment of death in a physical sense, at that moment there's going to be a karmic pressure. So the next time, just by saying yes or no, you don't have to disclose it, though it would be useful. Did you have, during the last week or two, like a high energy event that was very difficult for you and knocked you off your skateboard? She's saying yes. Anybody else?
Yes, Judy, yes.
Judy is saying yes. Susan?
Yes.
Yes. And yes, okay. Ivan didn't. Well, what about
the figured it out yet.
Racquetball tournament?
Hawk Lady says yes.
Hawk Lady?
Catherine says yes. Simon says
yes.
Simon says yes, plenty.
Say, Simon says what?
Yes, plenty. Puzzle Trick says yes.
Okay. Okay. Take those moments. Now, go back just in memory, and just flat memory. And your machine did something. Now, a couple of people I've talked with about those moments, but I know that some, I didn't through very many, but at that moment, we had an opportunity to practice what Tamara was just talking to us about, because there was a tool, you had a tool to hang on to, right? And I remember when I was, Bhaktivedanta is not on at the moment, if I remember correctly, I don't think so, but he had a serious physical event. Serious physical event. Now, he also was in a friend and a very unusual individual. Brought him in because he was pretty much alone and cared for him. And I was doing readings for him at that time. And I was just blown away by his connectivity and how it felt like he did have something to hold on to. He did have something, you know, now I'm experiencing the clear light. And that's, so there's a number of points of practice that we're looking at here. One is find the next time you have a cathartic event, look into it. This is a practice moment for me. Even if you're sitting there and you're screaming at your best friend, or your friend of 25 years, and you're yelling at each other, if this other attention can come out and you can stick with that other attention, that's a practice of presence in the moment that we can do in life right now. Am I okay? It's the confusion in my brain.
No, I was thinking maybe it was this mic that, as you, it might be.
No, it's not touching.
I don't think it's touching the phone.
No.
It's off right now, yeah. Okay. All right, so that's one of the things I wanted to emphasize in that particular passage on page 42 in that this very first part. So, but there's this karmic, dying is described as the process of dissolving from the densest and heaviest to the finest and most subtle levels of our being all at once. It's all at once that occurs. So it's a desperate ride. I've heard EJ talk about certain people that passed that were more advanced individuals, and he said that they didn't lose that consciousness. They were able to hold it and able to make a decision in those first few days. And so let's just say that that skill set is there, and we have the ability in this life right now to begin practicing it. We have a few years, some of us have maybe until tomorrow. I don't know yet. I'm a little uncertain at the moment.
It's an unknown, yeah.
For myself. But so that's the deal that we're up against. So practice, life is going to keep bringing us these things that we need to practice on. If we are voyagers, we'll begin to recognize this, that it's a practice moment. Okay. What else, Susan? What else you got there?
I don't have any more comments.
Okay.
I do know how hard it is to hold on.
Tell me about it.
Well, I've had two near-death experiences. And one time, I was able to hold on in a car accident and just watch quietly, calmly, just watch the world as my car rolled. And then another time, I wasn't able to hold on and blanked out for 2 days, where I have no recollection of what they were doing to me in the hospital to take care of me.
Okay.
So I have both.
So then you can take that one experience when the car was rolling as a point of reference.
Mm-hmm.
The point of reference. All right? Because you were clearly in a death risk situation. The car's rolling down a mountainside, and at that point you could have easily died. But prior to that, you had, as Judy was telling us, your attention was there. It slipped into that. Why did it slip into that? Because for some reason, in spite of everything about Susan's life that we know about, he was still able to flip into this higher attention.
And I don't think it was a choice.
We're not talking about choices in that same way. We're not talking about somebody saying, oh, well, I guess I think I'll just go to my higher attention now. No, It's because of a particular kind of training that we've developed in ourselves over this lifetime practice and other lifetimes. We wouldn't be here unless it was up to us to start training in that manner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, also, David, I think that's really, really important, this idea of training ourselves and practicing.
Yeah.
I had a, you know, couple of two things happened to me in the last week or so, and basically what my experience is that it's not only just attention, it's a willingness to experience whatever is going on that doesn't feel so great, you know. It's this whole idea, which he goes into in this book, and Shankar Chopra talks about it in his book on the Bardo, of diving into it, you know, diving into it, where as a lot of times, you know, in different systems of self-observation, people actually imagine themselves like kind of standing outside of it. And in my experience, and this might be different for other people, when I started to say, hey, this isn't working all that well, if I just move into it, no matter how crazy it feels, you know, and I move into it, that's where that still point comes, because there's no resistance to what's going on, where you're able to come to a balance between the unreality of the situation, because, you know, it's all bullshit most of the time, the unreality of the situation and the sense of internal presence. And if you can get them to coexist in the moment, that's when this clarity comes from and there's resolution.
So that's what our, that's, so we're offered now a, we read some of the work that we've got from various, from EJ and other authors and stuff, and we can begin to see that there are hints as to what to do. So now our practice is how to recognize those times when we are to do it. So here's, you know, so we're thinking, okay, you know, oh gosh, you know, I'm going to die, and then what's going to happen is just, well, the essential self will just be there, right? Well, there's a problem. And that's the karmic wind that we've created. And in some of the more strange areas of in the Buddhists, when they start talking about this, they said that karmic results are classified into four different degrees of strength. The strongest is called heavy karma. And it can be either negative or positive. Negative heavy karma results from five extreme actions of murdering one's mother, one's father, or a realized person who's close to enlightenment, or injuring an awakened person, or, listen to this one, deliberately causing serious dissension within the spiritual community, the Sangha. So these are karmic powers that happen. And when those strong, heavy karmas are there, that's going to be a profound effect on us. At that moment of death as well, they will weigh heavily on us. And so we need to also self-reflect on some of these actions. And there needs to be what I call a form of repentance, or higher repentance, or confession of it, such that it lessens its power at that moment of death too.
Mm-hmm.
So there's all this energy occurs, and we have to learn to ride it. Like you watch these guys riding these surfing experts, and they take a fall off of a 20-foot wave, and they have to hold their attention during that period of time so that they can properly recover, so to speak. So self-reflection, just notice that at that moment of death, a lot's going to happen. Then, Susan, go ahead.
Well, as we were having this conversation, I noticed a profound difference in my experiences with the car accident where I literally had no choice. I was calm and I was there.
Okay.
When I was in the hospital, I still thought that I could control whether I lived or died. And so I was fighting because I still thought I had choice.
Okay. Let's just introduce this next segment here.
Okay, and there's a few comments later.
Okay. Go ahead and start reading the comments, and Jana. Go ahead, Susan.
Okay, so just saying that Simon was saying that it was amazing and that I was ready to carry on with my attention, and it was a very rare opportunity to find out about it.
Okay.
And then Melissa Lorca said the same thing that I had. She said, I had the same thing happen, Susan. Once I was able to maintain awareness, and once I just checked out.
Okay.
So I thought that was interesting.
Very good. So we're getting some models that we're looking at now. Okay, now I'm going to read the next couple of paragraphs, okay? So the top bounce, the Voyager hit. So now, at the moment of death, the Voyager has most energy, so it bounces all the way up into the clear light. On the top bounce, the Voyager hits the clear light. If the Labyrinth Voyager has separated with a great deal of energy, not fear, anger, panic, however, which is the wrong type of energy, which is nervous energy, then it bounces all the way to the top light clear light spectrum. The next bounce, the Voyager is unable to reach as high, this time extending only into the domain of blue light. Of course, we haven't yet taken a look at the lower end of this. If the Labyrinth Voyager is bouncing up into the light spectrum, then what happens when it bounces down? At the bottom end, the Voyager bounces into temporary oblivion. That's why unless we are, listen here, well-trained to maintain a thread of consciousness during the stage 4 sleep, we will tend to experience periods of blackout interspersed with periods of sudden and extreme exposure to the more intense radiation levels of the higher end of the light spectrum, which can bring about excruciating consciousness interludes and a desire to sink into the infrared levels of reality. So in the bottom end, without the ability to maintain a high degree of intensity of attention and presence through the stage 4 sleep, the Voyager will experience blackout and loss of memory and must, through these contact readings, be reminded of what's actually happened when the light spectrum is reentered on the top end of the cycle. Okay? Now, the first bounce. Clear light. Depending upon the amount and quality of work done on maintaining an intense special type of attention during human existence, the penetration of this field will be greater or less, and the down bounce into the area of oblivion. The down bounce can be viewed as the blackout area. So the whole idea is what happens when there's this bounce. So what the author is telling us here that there's going to be an immense amount of energy and there is going to be a bounce, right? And at the top of the bounce is this, the highest realms of the clear light, and then what happens?
Feeling. And you discover that there is a sort of a feeling. And it's not like a physical ceiling exactly, but it is like a measurement. It's like, oh, that is. And it's easy to get out at that point because of that. It does experience less like your head hitting upwards.
hitting the ceiling.
Yeah, it's like you're about to, a plant being about to break through the soil. And there's a ceiling. You notice for the first time that the roots were all, but there's light at the top, so it's the ceiling effect. But then there's the down bounce. And that is a experienced as oblivion, you're right.
Okay,
for the most part.
So here is a reporter telling us this is the mechanics of what happened.
Well, it seems that the consciousness finds the top part easier to stay conscious because the down bounce. At some point, I don't know, it may be that some beings or decide that it will never end. There will be no like floor. It'll just be, and you black out at that point, and I think that's probably when the floor is. And then you're right. It's quite crazy. Basketball, maybe.
Well, it's like a basketball. It's literally like an energetic bounce of a ball.
It. Yeah, and you let your aura take the hits, okay? Give yourself some space. Remember when you take an art class? Give yourself a border. Remember to do that, just for that part. It's theoretically the idea of there being some give, you know.
So the first bounce is a clear light. No, it's a clear light.
But it will break, yeah. It will break.
And then whatever your energetics are, you start to descend at that point. And we don't understand that either, so we wind up in oblivion. I'm going to read it again. Depending upon the amount and quality of work done, this is the first bounce into the clear light, on maintaining an intense, special type of attention during human existence, the penetration of this field will be greater or less.
One more idea that just passed through is the idea, if you've been swimming a lot in your lifetime, you really are primed for the clear light experiences. It is an experience like that. The light is so bright at the top. You do wake up.
There's an intense waking up.
Yeah.
And we're strapped with a particular kind of an intention, but this karmic wind is upon you too. So part of our job is to lessen that burden so that during that bounce, it's not as prevalent. When we get into the rest of the chambers, that'll become more evident. But right now, we're just in what's called a clear light bounce. And in that clear light bounce, there's just a tremendous amount of energy. We're not used to it. I've been in spaces where people unwittingly leave the space because they can't handle the amount of energy that is there. And I see that both in life and I see it both and in vocationally as well. They leave the space because there's just too much energy because their body physically can't take it. And take the amount of energy. So this is the practice of surrender. So like when you're in that kind of an experience that several of you have said that you did have during this last week, can you surrender in a certain manner, which I call not give in. I don't mean a give in. I mean an active surrender where you're aware that this is occurring and you surrender to the energetic of that space and you're looking around at that point. Okay?
Most people find it a very joyous experience from the inside. I don't, from what? The outside is various experiences.
I agree.
Go ahead.
No, I just agree it's a joyful experience.
The second bounce, or the blue light, still enough energy to escape rebirth. And to attain liberation in the clear light, the visible light spectrum and ambient temperature plasma phenomena of the space-time discontinuum is seen from above. The standing wave and interference patterns of the God world seem dull white, slower, as the light is reflected and broken. The breakup point causes harmonics. Following the separation of the whole note tonic, then the down bounce into the oblivion again, called the bottom of the well. And I'm just going to keep reading just for a moment here, and we'll comment. The third bounce is the white light. Then the down bounce again, as deep as the first or second. Finally, this bouncing up and down averages out, and the voyager is left depleted of energy, forcing one to accept submission to the all-absolute electromagnetic energy field of the lower biological dimensions, which can be viewed as having taken rebirth on one of the six lower worlds of existence. The real problem of primate existence is to train not the mind, but the essential self, the voyager, whose presence and attention survive after all ordinary forms and manifestations of consciousness have fragmented into the five basic and, to the primate mind, totally unrecognizable components, and is roughly equivalent to a cowboy who has never been exposed to anything but duck art and black velvet bar paintings of nude Mexican women suddenly coming face to face with a signed and original Picasso. So, anyway.
I love it.
The telephone's alive. It's rocking. Interesting.
Well, you know, can we talk about this, to train not the mind but the essential self, the voyager? Okay? I mean, there is a component, you know, as we're training ourselves. I mean, the mind is a tool. I mean, we're using it right now. So maybe to use the mind to train the voyager but not train the mind. Something like that?
Well, the essential self is more of an energetic training to it. We guide it to mood and energetic tonalities more so than the linearity of the mind. So we in a sense we guide ourselves by the heart centrum, and that's where we can find different ways. That's what I mean by surrender, then, is you literally open to that event, that the event that you had was just too much to handle in the last 2 weeks. That's what I mean, is can you open to that? Is Gnostic man on?
Anybody ever get in a flotation tank for the first time? There is a sensation that's like that, where it's a unique sensation, where you actually open to reality physically. Your posture changes because there's no pillow in the flotation tank.
Interesting. Okay.
It's unique. It is the first time, you know, feeling that you would get.
What Jan is referring to is the flotation tank, conceived of by John Lilly and engineered and developed by Glenn Perry and sold to Somatic Pain Company by Lee Perry and Glenn Perry. And you are literally suspended. The water is body temperature. It's infused with 800 pounds of salt. And you literally float in a dark, quiet, weightless environment. You don't have the touch point suddenly of...
Well, you do a little bit, but you don't at first. That first sensation of your spine going into its natural place without gravity.
Right.
That's a unique experience. I forget why.
Okay, so what we want to do is find moments during the lifetime now, before you hit this event called the moment of death, Bardo. Before that particular event, which is pretty profound, let's practice. So if you are in, let's say you're in an emotional catharsis with somebody, well, you know, most of us are, you know, pretty, been through a lot. We're elderly. We're in our 40s, 50s, 60s, and so on. And so we've had a lot of these experiences. You get into these emotional catharsis. We have plenty to say and do, right? And we're totally justified in our positions. And we go, yeah, and so on. Well, what if you surrender to that in a certain way and just watch it occur, including your own participation in it? That's the beginning of starting to experience what it's like to catch this bounce, catch the bounce.
I don't know. What, martial arts?
I'm just saying in regular life.
Yeah, it is. It's interesting. Okay, so if you get reports of catching the down bounce without having, while you're in the clear light state that first 3 days, so those reports would be most appreciated, even if you just come back with one little dot or something.
Yeah.
Something, evidence. Because that first 3 days is when they pretty much unhook everything, including your karma, everything is taken apart for you to observe, like you walk through a museum, a wax museum, basically. That is slowly melting. When you get to the end, it'll be finished. But you get odd experiences like that, like taking on a tour.
And Janice talking about is the first.
But the clear light.
3 days.
Yeah, they're literally removing you from organic life.
Yeah,
and you get to go places that leave you speechless, of course.
And the Tibetans, the Tibetans, as Richard Rose used to call them, they say that you stay there for 72 hours
physical, they don't
disturb the physical body for that period of time.
If you can leave it in the position that it was in, that really actually does help them get out and get a better light body going for longer.
So what I want to do is, I'll go more into the points leading up to death and things like that, some of those symptoms.
But you can work that out before.
Well, yeah, we can work it out before, but also reread these three sections, this section here, just a page and a half, particularly the three bounces, clear light, blue light, white light, and see what it feels like when you read through it. And then attempt to see if you can say something about it in terms of your organic life now. Are you seeing events that maybe are like that? What is it like energetically in those events? Because then that we have points of practice.
I almost think you're programmed to black out the down bounce. I don't know. Because you'll notice your brain will try to go over these events again and again and hit this area where there's nothing.
David, there's a question here from Simon.
Yeah, a couple of comments.
Go ahead, Susan and Harry.
Well, I just say the first thing is for Jana, there's several comments from Morgan, I see Molly.
Go ahead.
Marissa Lurka is saying wonderful, and Tianjo is appreciating Jana's insight was helpful.
Excellent.
And then Simon says, that means that you have to leave the body in the position after death for 72 hours?
No. But
you don't have to, but yes, it is helpful in a certain way. And certain people do that exact practice, and I don't know if Star and Nanda's on, but they actually work it out with their mortician that when at the death point, the body is basically packed in dry ice for 3 days before, in some cases, the moment of taking the cremation. It helps
David,
a little.
Excuse me.
Oh, go ahead, Harry.
I'd say I actually have that provision in my will.
So,
leave my body alone for 3 days.
So and then the next portion, next thing can occur. But so people plan for that if they begin to have this kind of information. During those 3 days is this energetic boost that we're talking about, this clear light event. And from what I've been told, and others can actually have connected with those, the great readers, as I call them, connected those individuals in the balance. But what I'm being told is, if you can maintain a sense of some clarity, presence, and attention during that period of time, there are unique opportunities that occur that are there for you.
It's just something to shoot for, sort of like the Olympics. If you get like just even a little thought of clarity at those bounces, it helps like everybody.
It helps everybody. Everybody
in the whole universe is, because just for a second, everybody's lined up. The north, true north is north, and things work for a sec. And it also gives everything a break. That's when the artist has to know when to pull back from a painting, because but there is, if you get that, it's just a second, it's a split second, it's just, you know, it doesn't even count as time, but it's definitely cool. There's a coolness factor to it about the universe at those moments, just at those moments.
So let's review that for a second, the comments that Jan is making about grabbing one point. The amount of energy we're talking about here is an immense amount of energy. It's an immense amount of energy that for most people, and I mean literally most people, you blank out. It's too much. The consciousness, which is all there's left at that time, shuts down. It goes quiet because it can't handle it. But what if we have worked on ourselves enough and practiced this kind of special attention of the essential self, and we work on ourselves so that there's a momentary glimpse of that bounce, that's with you forever. That's a permanent cognition.
It'd be like the spark of life. It's the one thing that counts. So, but I don't know if you would call it a moment or what.
Well, I say moment, but I say point, because it isn't.
It's a singularity.
It's outside of time. It's a singularity. It's outside of time, certainly. But what happens, let's say that that's all you do, is you're able to grab that one singularity, that one cognition in a certain way, and then you retreat back, and then you're in the rebirth cycle again. Guess what?
Yeah.
That's what you bring into the new rebirth life. It's like one permanence that's there. And it's with it for you. It's there for everybody. We talk about service. You know, what is service? Well, I'm going to help kids in East L.A. get more food. That's one way of service. But what I mean by service is, if you work on yourself enough that you have an inner presence, that there's more presence and attention for you and then for others, that's helping mankind too. How is it that the number of beings is endless and I vow to help save them all? What a braggart. Except it's possible. It's possible to do it in this manner. Go ahead.
Yeah, we're all connected, so.
Well, put it into action. Go ahead, Susan.
So Sarananda says, and this was a little while back, she says, true, the high energy is very prevalent.
Right.
And then Simon asks the question, I wonder if it would be the same when the body is going to be buried, not cremated. Would there be a difference?
There's a big thing, maybe.
Well,
maybe
in the first, I think a lot of it has to do with what happens in those few days.
Yeah, because of the karma relationships. You'll feel your families and stuff. You know what? That's at the end too. At the end
of the cycle.
You'll have that start to happen again, where you start interacting with the walls of the Bardos, and they start coming alive.
I have a question.
Whatever.
Go ahead, Susan.
Well, how critical is it for the body to be there for 72 hours?
It isn't at all.
I don't know.
It doesn't feel to me like it's critical. I think it would be helpful, but you'd still be doing the bouncing.
A reference point, a reference area.
Well, I think some people argue that by leaving it as it is, there's less, just one element that's less turmoil in that first three-day period of time. We should all study that, because there's literature out there about it. I will, too, and I'll see what I can find on it. But I've seen it work both ways. Like, some people want there to be vigilant reading during those 3 days, too, where they have a team of people reading for 72 hours.
That would be for people that intend to come back, usually.
Mostly your attention?
Like for surgeries and stuff. You really want to do readings then.
During that time of surgery, yeah.
Well, yeah, because you're generating actually some space time for them to come back to in a way. It doesn't make any sense to you. No words make sense. But
right.
I think it all works out like it's supposed to, and it's not as painful as we think it is from underneath it when we're holding it up. We're actually underneath creation, kind of just propping it up and doing our lines, and we wake up each morning new.
In a certain way.
Yeah,
and
we're also older.
And in a certain way, we're developing each day, we're developing our habits. Habit patterns. And some people are maybe not quite in that, but we are developing habitual patterns now that in fact are the Bardo patterns that we are bringing to the table. Because if on the way home right now from this event, you know, I get eaten by a large buffalo, other than being quite unusual.
They would report it to all the radio stations, and they would just hang up again. I don't know.
Buffalo ate this guy.
Can I interrupt you for a comment?
Yeah, well, I need to be interrupted. Go ahead.
You've gone too far.
Pardon?
I said you went too far.
I did.
So,
go ahead.
Sarananda is saying that the energy of the dead is the same whether buried or cremated. And this is from her experience as a mortician.
Yeah, and we're talking about the first 72 hours following literally the moment of death and how to deal with that. So let's all go forth. We're kind of toward the end of time, but let's study that concept there.
Of the 72 hours?
Of the 72 hours, and let's bring it back, and we're going to recycle through this bounce period. Because there's a lot there. So reread this little section, the page and a half that we went over today. And then we're going to revisit that along with an expanded discussion of the 72 hours.
We should get Sarananda to this because as a mortician, she's present with bodies at 72 hours.
Yeah, and she can call in if she has the ability to. I don't know if she has.
Well, I don't know what her telephone pictures are,
show
but
the
she would feel the,
show the side.
Energetics.
It would be helpful.
It's so wordless, though. It's a wordless area.
But that's what we're dealing with.
Yeah.
Is there anything else, Susan?
Yes, there is.
Go ahead.
Well, Star is saying that she's talking about those hours, the first 72 hours.
Okay.
Simon is saying maybe the body is not yet detached of its finer bodies yet.
That's the theory that the Tibetans talk about.
and that's why they need some time to have alone to finish the process.
Yes.
Susan, that's a very good point. This is Judy. You know, when I studied with my shamanic teacher, he talked about this with us, and he said, you know, it's not always that it just leaves. There's a process, and though a person may seem dead on all physical levels, it doesn't mean that the energy, you know, that his spirit has left the body, and it varies in time frames. And in fact, he explained to us, and I verified this through research, that somehow in the last rites, when they do the rites over the body, they're actually turning the energy in the opposite direction. So instead of opening the energy centers to assist the freeing of the spirit from the body, they're actually closing it off.
Okay.
Same thing happens with unction in the Catholic Church.
Uh-huh. Wow.
Is to close off centers so nothing else can use them.
Uh-huh. So we're entering into delicate ground, and it's worth it for all of us together to do some more research in this realm, and we'll bring that to each other so we can share of our common research then. And if you'd like, you can send me an email with whatever your research is. I can put it together, and I'll do the same on my own ticket. Okay? So I think that's it for tonight. Anything else, Susan?
Yes. Sarnanda says, yes, you can call in.
Okay.
Piando said it's been a useful class, and I just wanted to put in the question to talk about next week. What about when there is no choice and they take the body? Is it really not up to our attention ultimately that even if they take the body, there still is the chance to be to have your attention carry you through?
Well, all of it focuses on that. The concept is how to maximize your potentiality and maybe not disturbing the physical body may help. That's the point. And that's the only issue. And if it gets disturbed, then that's what happened. It got disturbed, right?
Right, because it seems like, for me, it doesn't really seem practical.
Sure it's practical. It's absolutely practical if that's what you want.
I can't possibly
see it. That's what you want. You just say, that's what I want.
Anyway, I will ponder it over the week.
Okay. Well, it looks
like
we have a good one.
Jana.
Thank you so much, Harry, and thanks to everybody else. And we look forward to seeing you next Wednesday as we continue this conversation. Good night.
Thank you. Good class.